Right, so at the same time as all this was going on, I became more and more involved with Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And by this time it was starting to be, it was coming up to the 90s. So we had a, there's a local group of in Orpington that I joined, and through that group, who did local activities and raised money for the May National Wealth. But from that there was in 1990 there was an international executive meeting here in London, run by, you know, not Orpington Group, but the national group. And I went to part of that, so met up with international women from all around the world at that meeting, which was another, you know, passing through the eye of a needle again. Just another awareness of other people's lives. I'd been to Moscow and realised, you know, their lives were really difficult there. And then meeting people from South America and Africa and all around, because there are 42 sections around the world of wealth. Not everybody had sent women, but there were a large representative from people from around the world there. And that was another, as I say, awareness thing. These international gatherings happen every 4 years in various places. I think it's 4 years. I'm not quite sure about that.
I think there's one this year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's every 4 years. I should know, but I don't. Anyway, so I'd been to the London one and was still active in the local group and the London section as well. I went to Berlin to the international meeting there, can't remember the date, and also to Geneva. And in those meetings, they talked about resolutions that were being passed in the UN, how wealth was a signatory to, I think it's the environmental section of the UN. So we had a voice in the UN, to my surprise. We were one of the NGOs that was recognised and who could put input into the UN. So that was a really wider field again that I was interested in. And there are resolutions that state that women, you know, for women's rights. Some of those were relevant, much more relevant to people who lived in distant countries like South America and the Philippines and places like that. But there are there's a resolution 1325 that is really about women's, very much about women's rights, and about that they should be represented on all the peace building and peace making. It's not just men who are in the, on these committees. Women have different views and different ideas and have a different outlook on life, so they should be represented on all those meetings. It's still not true, and but you can use that resolution in order to challenge governments. So that was my involvement in that. That was, as I say, another awareness of laws and things that were passed at UN level. It was a wider world again. And then here in well, at the national level, people, as ever, were getting older. People who had, you know, responsibilities were getting older. And I became membership secretary around the year 2000. No, it was 1998. I took on the role of membership secretary. Now, before that, everything had been kept by hand, written by hand. So there are log books, there are big log books around where all the, what is it when you write up about minutes? There are minute books that are all written by hand and are just fantastic. And all the membership things were kept by hand in ledgers. But by 1998, everything was becoming computerized. So I and another couple of other women decided that that's what we should, you know, set it all up and on a computer, it'd be much easier. And of course, communications were much easier now in 1998 and 2000. So it was easier to get in touch with women, emails and all that stuff, you know. So I was there just at the you know, beginning of that. So I was lucky because I was able to be in touch with lots more women, so that it felt that women in the outlying places felt as if they were part of the group. Instead of being out there on your own, you felt that, because I could be in touch with them much more easily. And, you know, you'd meet them on demonstrations and they'd say, oh, you're Glenley, or, oh, you, oh, I remember you, you live in so-and-so. So it really felt like a real good sisterhood, you know. That was very exciting. Anyway, that meant that I was on the national executive committee as well. And it was all very abstract, which all we didn't have any office or anything. It was all being run from my house. Everything came in here. And I must say my family were extremely supportive of it, because I was overwhelmed by it all, you know, I was just completely absorbed in it. But by a chance thing, we thought, well, you know, it would be better, instead of having meetings in people's homes, we should have an office where, you know, we could have somebody there who would be on tap all the time, instead of it just being my number and my email and all that. So fortunately, we came across this this group of women who had taken over a building in London called Tindall Manor, and several charities or women's organisations could have sections of it, could rent parts of it. So I got into it, and eventually, when our next executive meeting happened, we managed to get approval of it from, from the women there, that we should open this office. So we set about opening it, and I'd never worked properly in an office before. I didn't know about it. So I got lots of people to come and help and whatnot, but we did open the office there. And soon after we opened the office, and we were, you know, organising quite a lot, we were asked by, you know, the main headquarters in the international headquarters, if we would run the executive committee meeting again, international executive meeting again. And my first reaction was, never, we haven't got enough time. Nobody else anywhere was offering to do it. I said, no, we can't do it. It's, you know, we haven't got enough time to do it, because we had just months. But Sheila Trakes, who's a great yes, we can. Said, let's think about it. So we did, we talked about it, and we wondered where we could hold the meeting. And we went around several places to look to see where they had accommodation for, you know, 200 women or whatever, and in a space where we could all meet, and then outbuildings where people could stay. And I, in 1948, had gone to Avery Hill College in Eltham. And so Sheila said, let's go visit them and see if they've got the place. So off we went, and they were delighted. As I was telling them, you know, I was here 1,000 years ago as a student, and anyway, they liked all that idea. And also they had all the facilities there, that, because we had all the student accommodation, because we were having it in the summer. And so we organised that, which was splendid, and that worked very well. And we decorated it with all the banners that we had, and all together, you know, we ran workshops and stuff, and that was really quite quite a feat to set that. We were very proud of ourselves because it went very well. Anyway, time went on, and I was getting older and more tired and not feeling very well. And by this time, Ken, my husband Ken, had a stroke in 2008. And I was by that time 78. So I decided that perhaps I should give up being membership secretary and being on the executive of the of British Wilf. And I gave up then. And since then, I had a stroke not long after he did, which I've recovered from. And I'm now only involved really and truly in the local Wilf and some of the national Wilf, but not very much more. I miss not being involved in it. I miss the sisterhood. I miss the political activity very much. But it comes a time when you've got to say, it's not my turn anymore. Now, 85, I have to give up and let other young people take over, which I hope they do, because there's still an awful lot of work to do. And Wilf is still at it, 100 years from when we started. Which is very exciting. And we're all going off, well, a number of us, 30, I think, from Britain altogether, is going to The Hague, where the great celebration is going to be of Women's Stop War. That's it.